If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today, we see all 21 pilots. Valerie gets a cat, we defend for honor, and then ask, is PewDiePie a pewdie jerk? All that and more on this week's episode of Trust Circle. Hello, and welcome to episode 25 of Trust Circle, Top Shelf Gaming's number one and only podcast, where every week, me, your host, Devin Maldivia, is joined by my wife, Valerie, and Top Shelf Gaming's editor-in-chief, founder, co-founder, crazy person, and stutterer, and this plane going overhead, Marcus Garrett.
Hey there, ladies and spaghettis.
Hi there. I rushed through that because we are a quarter of a century old.
Wow.
Quarter life crisis time.
Yeah, I don't know what to do now.
Where are we going, guys?
Well, I think this is a good segue. I'm glad you asked. Uh-huh. So, when we started this show, there was, I have this friend who has a podcast, a group of friends. They have a show called Geek Stew. Mm. And I've been saying since the beginning, since before episode zero, that, you know, we would have them on, and we're 25 episodes in, and, you know, that hasn't happened yet. So, they live, I know Matt, one of the hosts of
one
that
of the
show,
stewards.
he listens to this show every week, and he always likes to remind me after every show that I have not had him on as a guest yet. And so I think it's time we finally figure out how to Skype people in. So our quarter-life crisis is maybe buying a bunch of stuff.
I did just get this webcam
got
for
a
work.
Webcam.
We got a webcam, okay.
It's not super great, but it will get the job done.
It'll get the job done. That's fantastic.
So and we got it's in the right spot.
Yeah.
And everything.
So we're going to make it happen because I don't know how many more times I can have him message me, asking me, hey, so, that great show, but one thing was missing, and that was me.
Oh, me.
So, let's make it happen.
Yeah, we have a couple ideas for guests we want to have here. We just haven't finally pulled that trigger unless we drag him physically into this room.
Yeah.
Which is easy. Well, and hard.
Yeah, because we have Valerie here, who's Hulk Woman. Who can lift anything.
Literally anything.
Anything.
Name it. Pickup truck. One hand. Entire maybe, garage. One hand.
Donald, maybe with like
Donald
a
Trump's
jack.
Chubby butt.
I can't even.
A cheeseburger. One hand.
It's weird.
She's so offended.
I don't want the imagery infecting my mind.
She's so red right now. She's it's actually so red. Turning red.
Well, as long as you don't turn orange, we're okay.
Yeah.
You're already halfway there. Halfway there. SpongeBob references, folks.
Look it up.
Google it.
Look it up. That's a Moana reference.
Well, you guys, it's been a week.
Mm-hmm. What
it's been
a week.
Quite
it's been.
A week.
What
I am
week.
Going to give the first round of weekend recaps.
I guess we're limiting this to just our weekends.
In my mind, I was saying week, but then I flashed to SNL for a second, and we got an update.
Mm.
And so I managed to not say update, but I was too slow
too
to catch weekend.
Slow.
So weekly updates, though, Valerie, you have a lot to talk about.
So much to talk about. Okay, so.
Jeez.
Painting a word picture. It's Wednesday afternoon. Devin and I drive to the Honda Center to go see.
First we drive past the Honda Center.
First we drive past the Honda Center, and then we make about 3 U-turns, and then we drive back to the Honda Center.
To be clear, you're saying Honda?
Honda.
And not haunted?
No,
I'm not going to the
although,
haunted center?
Although knows? That'd be pretty fun, yeah.
I guarantee you someone's died there.
I've died there.
Yeah. Okay, so.
Jeez.
We go to see 21 pilots there, and I don't know why I'm talking like this, I'm
turns
sorry.
Out.
I'm just so excited.
Turns out there's only 2 of them.
Yeah.
They're 19. They died in the Honda Center.
Thanks, Dad. So, let me tell you. It was amazing. It was so good. It was so good. So, like, I knew it was going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
I had pretty high expectations because they've always talked about how they're, like, they're happiest they, like, they love playing live music. Like, that's their whole, like, reason for being a band is so they can play live music. So they try to make every performance, like, really stunning. And they said that, like, I heard them in an interview once, that they try to make the experience just as good if they're playing for, like, 10 people versus if they're playing for, like, a stadium of, like, you know, 3,000. But this...
try 18.
No, it was 18,000. And it was... it was amazing. It was awesome. It was awesome. It was awesome.
And we're just gonna... fill the show.
So I'll just keep vamping a little bit about that.
Yeah,
so,
give us some highlights.
Some highlights. So, this was probably like maybe at the end of the second song.
Mm-hmm.
One of their things is that occasionally they wear ski masks while they perform. So this is like maybe like the second song of the night. Tyler. I'll use the first name. He's at the piano playing a song. And then a stagehand comes on and drapes like a giant black sheet over him at the end of the song. And then you see, like, the person in the sheet kind of, like, collapse. And, like, everyone applauses, like, the end of the song. So then it goes dark for a little bit. And there's just, like, the hubbub of the crowd. But then all of a sudden, there's, like, a spotlight into, like, the upper mezzanine. And he's standing there and takes off the mask. And everyone, like, loses their minds because they just got mind freaked.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, like, he got, like, a giant, like, plastic inflatable hamster ball. Got in it and crowd surfed in that.
Back to the stage?
Back to the stage.
Yeah, all around the pit and backstage in time with the music.
Mm-hmm.
What?
It was the most impressive like example of crowd surfing I've ever seen in my life.
There's one...
And this is also counting the fact, or the moment when they, Josh, the drummer, played drums on top of the crowd.
They had the crowd hold up like a board, and he like played drums on top of it like, with like his kit on the board.
What in the world?
And then there's another part where Josh, the drummer, he had a drum competition against his recorded self that was playing on this giant screen behind them.
Yeah. Life-size video Josh drumming regular Josh.
That's fun.
In time.
That's very fun.
So there's just tons of stuff like that. He climbed up on like a 40-foot tall little like pedestal for no reason, just rock a little bit.
That's a pretty standard concert like thing.
Yeah. Oh, I'd never seen it.
Yeah. Well, so the thing for you is you haven't been to very many concerts before.
Like two. And they're like little concerts.
And never anything of this scale, yeah.
Never anything of this. This was crazy.
So it was...
so good.
I was excited to go just to see how she would react because I haven't been to that many concerts, but I've been to a few. I've been to a few big ones.
Mm-hmm.
This one still blew everything I've seen out of the water, but I knew like she wasn't going to be able to comprehend what was happening.
They had, like, custom animation for every song. Like, custom video graphics that were, like, really, really cool and well done. They had this one animation where they showed, like, fan art that people had contributed, like, tons and tons of it, like, behind them on a stage. Like, I mean, just tons of cool stuff like that. They kept showing, like, having the little, whatever, like, camera thing that they used to record in real time and then transfer it up to the, you know,
to the screen?
The Jumbotron.
Yeah.
Like, they kept showing shots of, like, the audience or, like, the people in the pit. I learned that term, too. The pit.
The pit.
The pit. Yeah.
Concert graphics?
It was really stellar.
I've always wanted... I've had this, like...
yeah.
I guess secondary dream of, like, one day or just, like, in some other future, some other reality that I would be like, the guy making
you'd
those...
you'd be so good at that.
Concert graphics. In high school, I would actually listen... to music, and I would, like, create graphics.
Like, visualize.
Yeah, and I would just, like, try to see, like, you know, what I would do if I was actually...
I didn't know concert graphics was, like, a thing.
It's such a cool thing.
It's a cool thing, and it varies by band, and the thing with this concert was, this was the best production values I've ever seen at a concert, and not just it was the quality, it was the quantity, and it was the amount of different ways they continue to use all the pieces.
Yeah.
And so they slowly kept introducing new elements, but then they kept using the elements they've already shown in new ways.
Like The Witness.
Like The Witness. Much like The Witness. And the thing with 21 Pilots, and a lot of bands, but 21 Pilots in particular, they are very... They're heavy on symbolism, mm-hmm. Both like literally in the design of their albums and their music videos, but also just in their songs and their themes. It's very symbolic, and it's one of the things that they've been very intentional with. And it's symbolic, but not necessarily to communicate one specific idea. They have ideas. They create these things based on things that they understand and they want to express, but they are not necessarily explicit in their meaning when they present it, so that people who take it can sort of take it on and bring and pull it into themselves.
Well, that's the thing with their logo, right?
Yes.
They don't want to take away meaning that somebody else has...
They have meaning.
...has given it themselves.
It means something to them, but they're very hesitant to, like, spell it out for everyone. And so all of the graphics used in the concert was completely in line with all of their graphics since, like, before the launch of their latest album. In the same graphic style from all their merchandise, all their album artwork, all their music videos, that they've been throwing bits and pieces of the stuff in all throughout the concert, from not just the screens, but like from how they use the lighting to all the different costume changes that they had, the costume wardrobe. They were costumes. They were literally costumes. And so it's just, as a production, absolutely incredible. And I took some videos and some photos, but it doesn't do it justice.
It's
so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Even by concert standards, it was ridiculous.
That's awesome.
But that is not the only exciting thing that happened to us this week, Valerie.
Our week just kept on rolling. So that was Wednesday. Thursday morning, I go and ask the landlord.
I'll pretend to be pumped up for this next one. I'll pretend to be happy.
You'll be stuffed up.
I'm not going to yuck your yum.
Thanks. Yeah. So... due to differentiating circumstances, something has changed that now allows me to own a cat. I go to the landlord. I'm like, hey, can I have a cat? I have this other thing. She's like, sure, that's fine. Just sign this form.
So you got
a cat. I got a cat!
We get the okay from the landlord. The office is about 200 feet down there. The whole entire way, she's like hyperventilating on the way back. Just like physically shaking. We get inside, burst into tears for about 2 minutes, and then is online looking up every animal shelter within 100 miles. We find one. Not 2 hours later, we are bringing that cat home in a box. So describe our new cat for us, Valerie. Thing.
Okay, so let me paint a word picture. Her name is Marzipan. She is 14 pounds of pure cat. She has a little round face, small ears, big blue eyes that look like little jewels, a tiny nose, a little pink tongue, very tiny paws. They're about the size of a quarter
each.
So
in love. Oh my God,
she's
Valerie.
Got little stripes all over her body. They think she's a Lynx Point Siamese, but I kind of think she's just like a little freaked up tabby, because she's just like a little stray. Because she's got like tabby stripes, but then on her belly, like her back is like tabby stripes and like brown, but then her belly is kind of like a cream color.
Yeah.
Kind of like a little toasted marshmallow.
She looks... maybe she's a Cheshire.
She might be. Yeah.
You forgot to mention the most important part. She has a giant round belly the size
she's
of a balloon.
She has a giant belly. The juxtaposition is even more so with her tiny, tiny paws protruding at odd angles from this giant, giant belly. That's so cute. And she has a little tiny meow. She doesn't know how to meow very well, which is probably good because she's not loud. She's like that. She really likes kitty food.
I would hope so.
She likes sleeping on this one part of the couch. She's sleeping there right now, like a little fat angel. She likes sleeping on the bed.
I think the word is called cherub.
She is cherub. Ah! It's a cat! I love her.
I'm happy you got
thanks
the love of your life.
And now every time I look over at Marcus, like, his eyes just get puffier and puffier, and like they get reduced to more and more slits, and like his voice just becomes more and more nasal, and he just looks sad.
I'm so allergic to cats.
My dream is his nightmare.
I'm not like super allergic, but like this isn't good for my health.
You're building character. You're improving your constitution.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. How was your week, Marcus?
So this is the first weekend in a long time where I wasn't scheduled to work.
Nice.
Probably like, what, 2-3 months now?
That sounds about right, yeah.
And it was a very weird thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I've forgotten what to do with free time. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to use it anymore. But one thing I did do, last week on the show, Devin, for good old Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. I made a grand romantic gesture, and I asked you out on a movie date.
You did?
Yeah. To go see Lego Batman, and I cashed in on that real quick on Saturday. So you and I saw Lego Batman.
We did that.
Yeah. What did you think of it?
It exceeded my expectations, which honestly weren't very high. But I very much enjoyed that movie.
Yeah. Would you see it again?
I
think that's my litmus test. It's like,
with the right people, I definitely would.
Like in theaters?
Yeah. I would go see it with you again, Valerie. Hmm. I would probably, you know, go see it during matinee.
Matinee, yeah.
But yeah, I would go see it again. I wouldn't mind seeing it again.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. It's I love watching animated movies,
mm-hmm.
and then looking at the voice cast afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that it's a spoiler, but I almost don't want to say like who all of the characters were.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to talk about Robin because like because this voice, I was like, it has to be an adult.
Mm-hmm.
It's male.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know whose voice, whose famous person's voice.
Who can sound like
voice,
a little boy?
Who's an adult and a child at the same time?
Do you already know who it is?
I do know who it is.
Okay, yeah. And then I was reading the, you know, credits, and I'm like, oh my god.
There you go.
All falls into place.
This makes sense. But it's so out of character for him, though, mm-hmm. that, like, you know, like, it just totally caught me off guard, because I've never heard this actor speak so quickly.
When he's good, he's good.
Yeah.
He's good, he's good. Yeah.
And he was a great Robin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the aspects I wanted to go see, because I wasn't sure how he was going to pull that off.
Yeah.
And I think he did a great job.
He did a great job.
Arguably better than Will Arnett.
Oh, no. His performance was awesome.
I will say, the one thing that annoyed me, it's so little.
Batman.
There are like three times where Batman says, "Oh, I am so sorry," and he says it in the exact same inflection, and I'm pretty sure it's on purpose.
Yeah,
but like it just
like stood out to you.
Yeah,
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Like, it's just this weird like word pattern.
Batman, I mean it's hard to quote that movie without spoiling stuff.
A lot of Batman humor.
Yeah, a ton of Batman humor. You mean nothing to me.
Yeah, a surprising amount of references to, like, literally every other Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. The filmmakers didn't want you to forget that they were actual Batman fans.
Yeah.
Like, they weren't just like, Batmobile, ha, lol.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah, remember that joke from the Lego movie?
Yeah.
We made it 2 hours long. Uh-huh.
It was a legit Batman film with just a Lego coat of paint.
Yeah. Which is what the Lego movie was. It was a legit movie with a Lego coat of paint.
Yeah.
What did you think about Ninjago? We saw a preview for Ninjago.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I'm going to see it on principle of there have been two good Lego films. But that one, so like, when I heard Batman was coming out, I was like, oh, makes sense. I'm questionable.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not, like, sold on it, but I'll go see it. Even more so with Ninjago, I'm like, makes sense, but I don't know. So, these are the type of movies now that I'm going into, like, expecting, like, hoping to be surprised by, mm-hmm. but expecting it to just go downhill.
Pop quiz.
Yeah.
What is a movie that you've seen that you've had, like no expectations for, that you've been like, oh, this is going to be a turkey. And then you were like, this was actually really good. Really?
Lego movie, yeah.
Lego movie. How about you, Devin?
Lego Movie was amazing.
I was very excited about Lego Movie, and it exceeded my expectations there as well. I mean, honestly, Moana. I went in, and you're like, nah, Moana. I didn't expect it to be bad.
Moana.
I didn't think it was going to be bad. I would actually say more Rogue One.
Yeah.
I think I expected Rogue One to be okay. I expected Moana to be good. I didn't expect to love Moana.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I would like maybe. Maybe The Conjuring.
Conjuring was really good.
Yeah.
What about you?
Very random memory, but one time I remember my family and I watched Cellular, which is from like 2006 or something.
Oh, that movie was legit.
It's got vintage Chris Evans.
That was Chris Evans.
Which one is Cellular?
It's this one where there's this like kind of like douchey guy.
This woman gets kidnapped.
She gets kidnapped. She like Hollywood magic. Yeah. She like the guy who kidnaps her and keeps her in the room. He like breaks the phone, but then she like taps wires together and manages to get it to start working. So she randomly calls this douchey guy that we've been introduced on earlier in the movie, and then like he figures out how to like help her get out of there from her captors. But yeah, it's got vintage Chris Evans before he got all buff for Captain America.
Back then, yeah. I didn't know who that was. So I wouldn't have even known that was him.
Yeah.
So you really liked that movie then?
It was pretty good, but funny enough, the main thing I remember is my dad saying, as he like presses play on the DVD, like, this is going to be a turkey. And then, like, later on, at the end, he was like, that was actually pretty good. So, just because of that framing of this memory, that's why I remember it so.
You're 1 year older than me?
I was born in 92.
I was born in 93.
Bunch of babies.
You're born in 90.
90. Ugh. What a geezer.
Good geezer, yeah.
What a geezer sneezer.
Paycheck, Grandpa. Get your AARP check.
Don't forget me when I'm dead. Why don't you eat your prunes, Grandpa?
I did.
Do you need some ointment, Grandpa? What about those dentures, Grandpa? Anyway, so we were the same age when we saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it in theaters, but I remember however long ago that was, like, I remember watching it, and I remember thinking that it was really, really cool.
Yeah.
Because my parents always brought me to movies with them. And I actually used to do this thing.
Yeah.
When I was, like, really young, and they would bring me to movies, I had this basketball pump.
Okay, continue. Pray tell.
And I would bring it into the movies, and, like, I would, like, sleep through most of it. Uh-huh. But whenever, like, if it was an action movie, whenever there was, like, gun shootouts, I would get my pump, and I'd be like, pew! And I would, like, pump it, and I'd pretend like I was shooting all the bad guys with it.
That's the most little kid thing I've ever heard.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't know why they let me do it.
Because you had good parents.
It's like, they were just like, well, we don't have a babysitter, so this
he'll entertain
do.
Himself like this, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty good.
It was a good time. It had a good time. But I remember that movie, though, and I remember the part at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess I'll spoil it, because it's like 30 years old, a billion years old now. But like at the very end, so like...
Mm-hmm.
The bad guys, so he tries to find this woman, mm-hmm. and they finally come together, and they're mm-hmm. trying to escape all of these bad guys mm-hmm. who have the money, who have whatever
mm-hmm.
they're, like, chasing. And then they steal his cell phone, or they, like, break it,
mm-hmm.
or, like, something. And so there's, like, no proof of the crime, because he was, like... because it was right when like video phones started kind of humming out, and like so they were still using cheap flip phones that had those like really like crappy cameras on it. But of course in the movie it was like HD quality. But then I was like, oh no, like they're never gonna believe him now because they just broke his camera.
It's like evidence, yeah.
Yeah, and then he was like, oh, well, not so fast, because before you broke it, I texted, and so now I have it on this phone. And I was like, yes, yeah, that was so smart. And I was just like, yes, wow. he did it.
Beat him.
He saved the day. Wow. With some quick thinking.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Well, I did something this weekend that I'm going to talk about. And that is I bought For Honor. And I bought it kind of just on an impulse.
As you tend to do.
As I do. Just, right in line with good old me. So I played the open beta before. After trying to get into both closed, like the closed alpha and the beta they had, I signed up for them like during the summer. Never got a code.
Oh, that's when we went to GameStop, right?
Yeah, and I realized I had signed up prior to that.
Wait, even. I never got my code.
Yeah.
Hey! Hold on.
The whole thing was
there's
a mess.
There's two codes I didn't.
But I played the pre-release beta. Found it surprisingly enjoyable. It just kind of stuck in my mind. And then I bought it at, midnight on Friday.
Midnight on Friday, when all the good decisions happen.
When every good decision is made, midnight on Friday.
Was it a wine-induced decision?
No, it was just, I want to play it.
It's probably, cookie high or something.
Yeah.
He was high on cookies.
I was high on cake.
Freaking chocolate
cake,
high. Yeah.
That cake was really good.
That was a good cake. I do.
That's all Lori's fault. Anyways, I want to talk about For Honor because I'm really worried that this game is going to get lost in the tidal wave of awesomeness that is about to hit us.
Yeah, so
because this
we're
tidal
getting
wave about to hit us.
Horizon Zero Dawn next week, Zelda next week. Oh my god! Oh my god!
And then Mass
gosh.
Effect is coming out.
Zelda's next week. Oh my god!
Next Friday. Next Friday, sir.
Is it actually next Friday?
Next Friday.
Devin, don't talk like that. That's madness. I've waited for this game.
Would you
for
say it's
so
wild?
It's like a whole breath of it.
Anyways, so the reason I'm talking about For Honor is to hopefully, spread the good news. This game, I feel like, is the fighting game I've always wanted in my head. And we talked about it a little bit when we were discussing ARMS. We were talking about the Switch lineup and how I've always wanted a more methodical, slower-paced, physics-y-based fighting game that is less about how fast you can input button combos and more about using your brain and fighting more the way you actually fight.
Yeah.
In actual fighting. And this game, more than any game I've ever played, at least, absolutely delivers on that. For those of you who don't know, it's basically what if samurai, Vikings, and knights were fighting each other. The video game.
Deadliest Warrior.
It's the video game. So they made two Deadliest Warrior games, and they weren't great, but I will say they did sort of scratch the same itch, because you depending on how you hit things, you could get one-hit KOs because you're using deadly swords.
Yeah.
And so I remember playing the demos of those games on 360, and they didn't feel great, but there was some. I liked the idea of that, and I feel like For Honor is the realization of a lot of those ideas that I wanted. And so you each of the three different factions. There's four different characters, ranging from your standard all around boy to your big strong boy. There's a quicker assassin boy, and then there's a hybrid version of two of those characters, and not all the. Not all three factions have, parallel characters.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really get a big. They all have big berserker characters, but they play very differently.
Yeah.
And every character plays very differently, which is already a big plus. But the big thing is, the combat system is really deep. It's really deep.
It's a little too deep.
It's actually intimidating because you go in and the tutorial runs you through and it makes you think it's pretty basic.
Yeah.
And you can get by on those basics, okay. Like if you get really good on the basics, you can do okay. Kind of like actual fighting.
Mm-hmm.
But each character has all these different variants and they have, you know, they do have a few different combos. But you know, it's like three attacks maximum. But they have, you know, like these things you can do this move and this other move. If you land this move, then it allows you to open up this move, or if you dodge this way. And because every character is based on the same fundamentals but has very different execution, when you fight your opponent, you're constantly thinking, you know, much like other fighting games, like what are they going to do? But it's a 3D fighting game, so a lot of it is what you can do within your environment, because you can throw people into things, you can throw them onto things, you can throw them off of things, and it's really engaging. And I feel like you don't have to know about other fighting games to feel engaged in this one, if that makes
any sense.
But no, it definitely helps. And like even you, like you came over and you just kind of walked in, grabbed the controller, and started picking things up.
Mm.
And you were fighting
Grizzy. Oh, Grizzy. I got you, Grizzy. I finally got you. Yeah, little dog.
He kicked your butt the first two rounds, but like by the end of that match, like you were picking up on it, and then you rematched and you got him.
And I kicked his butt. Or hers.
Or hers.
Yeah. Or theirs.
But it's so much more thoughtful than I expected this game to be. The moment I purchased it, I had regrets. I was like, this game, I'm going to be tired by the end of this weekend.
No regrets.
But when I played it and realized, you know, how deep each character's movesets and ability and how much they differentiated from each other, you know, how far that went, like, it's kind of all I've been thinking about this week. It's just I've been playing a lot of the night. So I've been, in my head during work, trying to, think out, new strategies against each of the new characters. Mm. I'm having a lot of trouble against the samurai assassin, the guy I was fighting earlier tonight.
Yeah.
Because he's really tricky. He's really quick. He has a lot of weird counter moves. So I'm trying to, plan, around, okay, if he goes for, you know, his back dash heavy attack move where he, rings back, how am I going to be prepared to...
Devin, I have to say, you're in it.
You're in it.
So when I was back... when I was really into Smash, I would have dreams about Smash Brothers. I would have, I would be in class daydreaming about, I would play out whole matches in my head against some opponent, but they would be acting on their own and I would be controlling my guy.
Yeah.
And it would be an actual match.
Yeah.
I think that's where you are, and it's a scary place to be because you're I'm into deep, but it's also kind of cool because you're I'm in too deep, but I don't want to get out.
No, and I feel engaged in a way similar to how I feel about Overwatch.
Yeah,
a little not as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really good looking game, but it looks like you expect it to.
Yeah.
Overwatch, you know, visually it's a whole other thing. There are a lot of things Overwatch does that are much better than this. But I wanted to talk about it because this game is going to live or die on its online community. And I think they released it at a really bad time. And
why?
Because there's all these games going to come out. And so asking someone to spend full price on a game right before all these hugely anticipated games come from. For Honor is a brand new franchise from a publisher that people already have mixed feelings about. I unabashedly love Ubisoft games.
They make the gamiest games.
But, you know,
so full of game.
This would have been a really good January game.
Mm-hmm.
Late February, or I guess mid-February.
Didn't used to be that way.
No.
But now February is becoming the spot.
So,
if you're listening to this and you've been thinking about For Honor, you know, I suspect it'll probably get a price reduction fairly soon. A lot of Ubisoft games have. Watch Dogs 2 is, you know, now regularly $30 to $40. Dishonored, I think, is $30 now already. So, like, games are dropping quickly in price. But, like, go for it. Pick it up. Like, this game needs a community to stay alive. And I think if, like, you're willing to put forth that money, like, you're probably really surprised with what it is.
I want people to play, and I don't want my money to go to waste. So play it.
I'm having a thought. So, you're right. Like, this game is going to live or die based off of its community, because it's online only, so...
There's a story mode.
Oh, is there?
But it's, like, it's fine, but it's not enough to...
That's not why you
No.
So, I mean, I think what's actually against it is what makes Overwatch so great is that, like, is that all of the characters are just generic. Like, they all look different if you're playing it, but, like, to the outside person... They all just look kind of same.
They look like a bunch of little eggs in a carton.
None of them have faces.
Similar, yeah.
You know, like, they have profiles, they have emotes.
There's nothing to latch on to, really. And so I think it becomes difficult to, like, so much of Overwatch's success has been because people, personally,
you resonate with
it. Yeah. And there's, like... And with For Honor, it's just these faceless avatars.
Yeah, no, I like Play the Knight. I don't, you know, I don't feel a connection with the Knight or the Warden.
Mm-hmm.
He's the cool dude. Or I guess my Knight's a lady, so she's the cool lady.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of emotional resonance, but there is a lot of metal resonance when you smash those, and you get that sweet counter, and then you go in for that push, and you just, it's so good.
So good.
Well, let's take a quick break. Let's go refresh our drinks, go to the bathroom if we need to, and we'll come back with our topic of the show. Adios.
Do I have time to raise a family?
If you do it really quick.
Okay.
All right.
Go.
And we are back. How was your break, you guys?
It was good.
It was super great.
I sat next to you.
I put him a cat.
You did.
Yeah, Valerie just...
checked in on Marzipan.
She's so cute.
And she did a pee.
You did a pee. All right, moving on to our main topic of the show. The reason we're all here, is it though? I'm not sure. It's time to...
I never thought my life would come to this.
I didn't really either. It's one of those things you never, like, this isn't a topic I'd talk about.
Yeah.
A year ago, if you said, hey, you're going to have a big old conversation about this, you'd be like, that sounds dumb.
I would.
You're going to be having a conversation about this, and guess who's president?
Did you see... Okay, so there was this Twitter thing. It was this guy who, like, loaned his brother money... or the other way around, whichever way makes sense. But, like, in an email, he was like, you like, don't have to repay me if... And then one of these, like, six...
Like, highly improbable things. Yeah.
And then one of the conditions was, like, you don't have to repay me if Donald Trump becomes president in 2016.
Uh-huh.
So guess who got off?
Wow.
The loan anymore.
Well, speaking of things that we never thought we'd have to deal with, think about, it's time to talk about a leaky cup and PewDiePie in some hot water.
And PewDiePie.
Cute.
I'm just doing his catchphrase, folks.
Does he say that?
I'm PewDiePie!
I can't say I've ever had the pleasure of watching one of his videos.
If you can believe it, even more grating than that.
I'm PewDiePie!
But it's his thing. So...
he gets chicks.
This all went down, like, last week. So we're on the tail end of this, and so it seemed like we would talk about it now, or we let it lie. I thought it was important enough to...
We let it pie.
Gosh darn it.
I thought of that too, and I didn't vocalize it.
No. There are some puns you don't need to say. So.
That's false. You say everyone.
Do either of you want to do the summary, or do you want me to do it?
Jam on, my friend.
Keep it up.
Okay. So the Washington Post called PewDiePie out a little bit ago. Over, I believe it was 9 videos PewDiePie had posted since, I believe, August, that contained, in one form or another, anti-Semitic jokes, imagery, references, etc.
That's a lot of anti-Semitism, and it's very dense. That's like more than one anti-Semitic thing per month.
He's got a quota to meet.
Apparently.
So, you know, some drama happened, and the end result is his, like, overseeing, I forget what they're called.
Maker?
Not a studio. Well, Maker Studio, but they're like the...
Their parent company?
Well, Disney's...
Disney's the parent company, right?
Disney owns Maker, and Maker is kind of like a...
It is their multi-channel network.
Yeah, thank you, network. Network. So, Disney, via Maker, dropped PewDiePie. YouTube basically downgraded PewDiePie. They canceled the second season of his YouTube Red show. They're lowering, like, his ad runs. And, you know, they're putting him pretty squarely in the doghouse over his videos, some of which have been deleted by PewDiePie and or YouTube. And there are people freaking out on both ends of it. And I wanted to get your thoughts on all that. So before we recorded, we watched one of the videos the Wall Street Journal had published, kind of recapping the story, and we kind of perused a few articles here and there.
Hold on. But isn't Wall Street Journal fake news?
I guess you're right, so we can just shut this all down.
Yeah, none of this is credible.
Sorry, you guys. Mm-hmm. We'll see you next week. Yeah, so there are a lot of opinions. Some people are 100%, you know, behind PewDiePie, you know, being punished this way. Some are saying it should be harsher. Some are really upset about this, and calling out, you know, freedom of speech and his right to say what he wants in his videos, and the fact that, you know, he's not really an anti-Semite, and PewDiePie himself, his defense was that he's not anti-Semitic. He's trying to work on his comedy, and he's not really, you know, he's new at the whole comedy thing, and he's working out jokes, and these ones didn't work out, and he regrets that. Do you guys have any, you know, off the cuff immediate responses to any or all of that?
I can see how, like, from the basic kind of breakdown video we watched, putting the whole topic in a nutshell, showing clips from some of the 9 videos, like, in each of those, like, he wasn't the one that was saying explicitly the anti-Semitic comments, but also, like, he put them in the videos. Like, it's not like he couldn't have, like, not included that content or edited it out or been, like taken a step back. So yeah. It's interesting because, like...
He went out of his way to put that stuff in there.
Like, even though the words did not spring from his lips, like... It's kind of like he's not claiming ownership of them, even though he's forgetting the fact that because he has such a big audience, people see him as claiming ownership of them, especially that other site. I forget what it's called. Maybe you remember, Devin. The one that's
the Daily Stormer.
The one that's linked to, like, a lot of, like, hate speech and, like, just badness in general. Then they've now proclaimed him, or proclaimed themselves as their the number one, you know, PewDiePie fan site. So, like, even though he doesn't think he has, you know, he doesn't think he's spawned these, you know,
so
jokes
even
of his own accord, like, people attribute them to him.
Yeah. So even if he thinks that he's joking,
yeah,
like, people are, like, still believing him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what's funny is, not funny, I don't know, what's something is that, like, it seems that this is a very, very severe reaction, or severe kind of, like, punishment, I guess you'd even call it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my place to say rightly so or not rightly so. Like, I don't know enough to say that. But, like, I'm just thinking, like, this is a little bit prescient. Because even, like, things that our commander-in-chief has said, not that our commander-in-chief has said anti-Semitic things. Maybe he has. I don't know. But it's funny that this media figure is receiving such stringent punishment when, like, I can think of other instances in recent past where... large presences have said very problematic things and not received nearly the repercussions.
To be fair, just for listeners who, I think most of our listeners are pretty familiar with at least who PewDiePie is.
PewDiePie.
Okay, but you can't. PewDiePie isn't just a YouTuber. PewDiePie is the YouTuber. He is YouTube. He has the most subscribers on the entire site. By I think like he has twice as many more as like the second place subscriber count channel, whatever.
It's probably Rhett and Link. Like, probably second place.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like his base is huge, and so for a long time, when PewDiePie was on the rise, there were a lot of people who were quick to dismiss him. You just sit in your room at home and make your stupid internet videos. Like
they didn't understand.
He did, but the thing is, like, that's legitimate. Like whether or not you like the content coming out of, you know, YouTubers and the idea that someone can have a job doing that, like, it is a legitimate job to have. Like there are a lot of people who make a living for them and their entire family doing that.
Oh yeah.
Like Rhett and Link.
Like Shay Carl, like, you know, just list
like
all,
Robin
the, like, all the boys you know. Like, that's what they do. And so I think there's still a little bit of that sentiment from, you know, people outside of our generation, people outside of our immediate interest circles who might still see this as just some small, weird niche thing, but... As annoying as I find PewDiePie's name, okay, you know, like I have to recognize, you know, the influence that he has, like that, like you said, Valerie, and you know, Marcus, you know, do you want to give some input on this before I do my rant thing?
Yeah, I actually have to say PewDiePie. No, please continue.
Don't scare the cat, Marcus.
I'm sorry.
For me, I think Valerie, you hit it on the head when you mentioned his influence, his circle of influence. You know, a lot of YouTubers are coming out in defense of PewDiePie and saying like, no, he's not. You know, he's not racist. He's not an anti-Semite. He doesn't hate Jews, even though he. All the problems with, you know, him choosing to edit his videos and show them that way. So that's the thing. And the critique that he's received from a lot of people critiquing him is that these aren't hashtag real reaction videos. You know, these aren't spontaneous. These are edited. His videos are very carefully and specifically and intentionally edited. And so even if it's not him saying the jokes, even if it's him not actually believing these things, there was a moment where he looked at his content, looked at his material and said, this is what I want to present today. And he did that at least 9 times. And so like, for me, that right there, whether or not he means those things is an issue because it doesn't matter if he means those things, he's saying those things in front of a huge audience, many of whom are young teenagers, young teenage boys.
Or even younger.
Or younger. Who just chemically, physically, you know, just are going to suck in what they hear and embed that into them.
Well, then if they see him making that joke, then they'll perceive that it's okay to make that joke, or it's cool to make that joke, or it's edgy to make that joke.
Yeah, my girl, you're getting to it, yes!
You know, I think I mentioned this at least like once after the podcast. You know, I used to be a youth pastor.
So, what? I forgot.
Yeah, let me just remind you.
Bible thumper.
But one of the most consistent problems we have to deal with is our kids. You know, a lot of them were our boys, but not all the time. You know, girls watch YouTube too. You know, they would just like say these like ridiculous things, and some of them were, you know, inappropriate. Some of them were just like nonsensical. And I'd be like, what are you saying? And they would be like, I don't know. I, you know, it's what Bloopity Bloop says or Bloopity Bop says. Or, yeah. And fairly recently, after I left, I was talking to Trevor, the guy who took over for me. He was asking how things were going. And he was like, things are going pretty good. we had to have a weird conversation about not telling people to drink bleach. Because I guess, there was a brief YouTube fad joke thing about, go drink bleach as, like, an insult. And that, like, took over the youth group for a couple weeks. And, like, they were just telling everyone to go drink bleach. And, like, they had to have a sit down. Be like, you can't say that.
Yeah.
And, he said, like, a lot of the kids, 11 through 17, they didn't mean that. Some of them didn't even know, like, what that even meant. Like, oh, like, drinking bleach is bad? I don't know.
It's gross, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's just like a gross, it's just like an ice bucket challenge.
Yeah. The death bucket.
Yeah, but because it was just something that was just of the internet zeitgeist.
Yeah.
And so, do I think those kids meant it? No, obviously I don't. Like, I know those kids. Like, they're kind of crazy and ridiculous, but, like, they're not... they're not intentionally harmful.
They don't know, but the problem is that the source that they're getting this stuff from is someone who does know.
Yes, or at least should know
better.
And so my problem with PewDiePie is not whether or not he's anti-Semitic. Well, I guess that's a problem I would have if he is or not. But regardless of whether he is or not, the fact that he is presenting those messages in joke form or not, if it's a joke, it's not a funny joke. If it's not a joke, it's a whole other issue. But a lot of young people are hearing this, and they probably don't even understand what it's all, what it all means, but they're going to repeat it, and I don't have a problem with companies or culture putting their foot down and saying, like, no, those aren't the ideas we want passed down to our younger members. Like, we don't want those ideas, whether they're understood or not, whether they're actually believed or not, to be furthered. And so the groups that are in support of PewDiePie on the basis of free speech, that's not an argument, and this is the part where I sound like Colin Moriarty. Free speech has no validity on YouTube. They're a company. They can choose what they have on their website.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good idea for them to allow people to be honest and say things that are potentially offensive, but there's a line, and they get to draw the line wherever they want.
Like, I think on one of the articles that we looked into prior to this recording, it said that, like, in YouTube's terms, like, they allow, like, being provocative or being satirical, like, if someone wants to say something like that, but they don't allow speech that's hateful or, inflammatory like this. So obviously they interpreted this as hateful and inflammatory.
And they have the right to do so. Mm-hmm.
And you can disagree with YouTube for doing that, but they're not breaking freedom of speech laws.
It's not just like this magic internet portal where you can put your videos out, free of consequence, free of, censorship. Like,
yeah,
it is. People forget that it is a company because it is so ubiquitous online.
And I just, even if it wasn't something as heavy and, historically impactful, for lack of a better word, as, anti-Semitism and Holocaust jokes, I'm always so frustrated with celebrities who are not aware of their influence,
mm-hmm.
especially when their audience is younger than them. Like, I just find it so irresponsible that, we see people doing, Disney stars, I guess, is an easy example to go to. You watch, that's a whole other thing, because, child stars, and there's a whole complicated issue. But when you see stars, kind of intentionally do things that are not just distasteful, but just, like, actively inappropriate. That's a weird thing, too, because it's not about... whatever. I just think if you have an influence and you have a group of people who will listen to your every word and who want to emulate everything you do, whether or not they understand what they're doing, I think you have a huge responsibility to be careful with that and to treat that as something that is easily broken. And that's not to say that people are allowed or shouldn't be allowed to do what they believe or think is right, because that's where you get into weird, like, Christianese, like, safe media stuff, and, like, I have a, you know, we've talked about that on that podcast, mm-hmm. and there's huge, huge issues there. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm not saying, you know, you can't ever swear and you have to remind kids to eat their vegetables and do their homework, but I think there's some sense of decency and responsibility that you should be aware of if you're in a position like PewDiePie. And I think that he, if nothing else, completely forgot or misused that responsibility.
So, Valerie.
Sure.
I was asking, you were going to say something.
Oh, were you volleying to me?
Yeah.
Okay, so, just to provide, I was thinking about this during your words just now.
Rant.
During my words. That's a very polite way of
that
saying
tribe. Snooze fest.
I was thinking just of an example of like a positive foil to the figure of PewDiePie, which I've mentioned before, is Rhett and Link.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I've heard Rhett and Link say, and for those who don't know, Rhett and Link are another hyper-popular YouTube channel. They have, I mean, like millions of subscribers, like, you know, like a YouTube Red show, mm-hmm. like... They've been doing this for years and years and years. Yeah. Like, their whole business is this now. But I've heard them say that they don't want to make any video or release any video, like, that their own children couldn't watch.
Mm.
So, like, their videos are, like, you know, profanity-free. Like, they're not, like, yeah. they're not provocative, they're not edgy, but they're still so funny. The quality is consistently really good. And, like, their popularity speaks for themselves. So, yeah. it's just, like they serve an example of somebody who, like, also realized that, like, their fan base is, you know, it's teenagers, it's, like, preteens, who knows? Yeah. It's, like, a lot of people that connect with them via the internet. And they also, it shows that they know that because in every video they feature a video sent in by one of their fans mm. saying their catchphrase. Yeah. So, like, because they can see who their fans are and that they know that their fans are, you know, in touch with them enough, to, you know, to send them videos and letters and stuff like that. Like, they, like, foster that.
That's awesome. Like,
you know,
and
don't
that's,
disregard it.
And that's a really cool thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I know, like, it was a huge thing for Will Smith, who, mm-hmm. like, during his brief rap career,
mm-hmm.
like, to always have clean lyrics that,
yeah.
that like, anyone could
listen to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting jiggy with it.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I think the fact of the matter, and I'm going to tie this in more closely with, you know, video games,
mm-hmm.
is that no one really has a responsibility to the fans to be a certain way, to be an example.
Mm-hmm.
Every movie star who, like, I always remember, I believe it was Scottie Pippen, who was this NBA player,
mm-hmm.
Really big in the 90s. Like, he like was always doing like crazy stuff, and
mm-hmm.
like the media was always like, oh, look at what he's doing now,
yeah.
blah blah blah. And then in one interview,
mm-hmm.
he says something like I don't want to be a good influence for kids, like,
mm-hmm.
I'm not playing basketball so that they can look up to me. I'm not their
mm-hmm.
example, you know. Parents need to parent their own kids and, like, teach them
yeah.
what's, you know, right. And so, I don't, like, I think it's important for people with a lot of influence to recognize the influence that they have. I also think it's up to them
mm-hmm.
to decide how they're going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think if you're making content that is for adults, and then adults see it and they can understand it,
mm-hmm.
then that's great. But if kids see it and they're not supposed to, then that's its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we get into PewDiePie, it's like he knows that a huge amount of his fan base is, you know, kids, teens. I feel like he should be more aware, but as a content creator, like, he's not subjugating anyone to watch that. It's like people are going to him, and if it's the content that he wants to make, then that's up to him. But to dismiss the amount of influence he has, I think is very unwise, and it actually does a great job of illustrating a greater issue within the video game community as a whole, specifically the online community, where we get stuck in this cycle, right? So, like, if, like, I'm playing a game like Overwatch and people are on voice chat, typically you would hear this more in a game like Call of Duty.
Yeah.
But you have little 8-year-old boys saying things like, he's such an F-A-G, or, like, I'm gonna kill you, or all these just like suck my bleep, whatever. All these just like horrible little things, and like, where are these kids getting this from?
Yeah.
And why do they think it's okay? Well, they learn it from the older players. The older players have some understanding of like what they're saying and what the impact that their own words have. But the little kid can't process that yet, and they're not going to for several years. And so they think that it's okay, and then they're starting to repeat the things that they hear, thinking that it's okay. And then those kids become the big kids and the new little kids, and it's just a cycle.
Yeah.
And so I think if there's anything I want to contribute to this conversation is just the fact that, yeah, like, Devin, you're right, like, people need to understand their influence, but there's also a responsibility, I guess, as onlookers, I can't think of the like proper word, but like as people who see this happening, to like speak out against this type of thing. I mean, I like had this instance where I was playing Overwatch and people started using the N-word frequently, and then that became this like whole big thing. And it's like those people, they didn't see it as a problem, they didn't see it as racist, you know, whatever. And it's like these things persist as long as people don't speak out. And so the media backlash, I think, is great. The punishments for PewDiePie are, you know, pretty severe.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's justified or not. I think it's well within YouTube's right, well within Disney's rights. Like, that's going to impact him a lot. I think it's easy for me to say, well, he's a millionaire. What's like losing 1 million when you're making 15 million every year? But I mean, that's still his livelihood. So, but I think overall, this is just a kind of nuanced thing. Like, people just, I don't know how to wrap this up, so I'm just going to stop talking.
Yeah. I mean, it's indicative of, like, our current socio-political climate and how, like, as we become aware of more, I don't know, this is too broad, injustices, like, in the world, we become more sensitive to just broad terms that people are using that may or may not subconsciously contribute to how people see the world.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, it's good to be aware. It's probably good that PewDiePie was kind of put in his place a little bit. Just as like a, I don't know, a warning shot to other, you know.
Well, that's huge too, because if it can happen to
impressionable people,
if it can happen to the, like, biggest YouTube star, then that's like, oh shoot, like, that can happen to me too.
Yeah.
I think it just speaks a little bit to, and I was thinking about this while you were talking. It's we all want the freedom to do what we want to do. And that's all well and good, and that's, you know, part of what living in America grants us.
Yeah.
And yet, we don't want to take responsibility for the consequence that has on those after us.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's like, you know, we have our parents and our grandparents who, you know, the stereotype, you know, just blame, you know, make fun of millennials and all of our, you know, participation trophies and all of our, you know, whining and all of our, you know, we can't own houses. But that's because of things that they did.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. they ruined the housing market and they're the ones giving us those trophies.
Mm-hmm. We didn't ask for those.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's this weird thing of, like, wanting to have your cake and eat it too. Over, I'm not responsible for anybody else. I'm gonna do my thing. This is my art. This is my passion. And there's a part of me that says, yes, go follow you. You do your thing that you feel called or whatever to do. But to not at least acknowledge your influence, whether or not you let, like Scottie Pippen, whether or not you want to be the influencer, to not acknowledge that influence exists.
Yeah.
I think is irresponsible. And then if you do that, don't dare complain about the consequences of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to work to influence those coming next, you don't get to have a voice in critiquing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, you know, PewDiePie saying his jokes weren't meant to be taken offensively.
How could they not?
That's fine. Yeah. But now that you know that they were, don't try to sell them as anything but.
Yeah.
And don't try to act like that's not going to affect your viewers. So, I don't know. I suspect we'll see some more of this. It's a weird time. People are really jumpy. Mistakes are going to be made. And we'll be here to rant about them then, too.
Yeah, we will.
But for now.
So, people, this has been another episode of Trust Circle.
A whole quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 25. So, we have our Google Drive that has now...
I saw the folders.
We have folders that's, like, separated for, like, episodes 1 through 25 and then 26 through 50 and, like, so forth. So now we can start using... That second folder.
We made it.
So that's great. Like I said, this has been another episode of Trust Circle. We post every Wednesday at 6 a.m. Follow us on Twitter at Trust Circle Cast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, and your other favorite podcast services. And join us in our mission to get one brand new written iTunes review every week in 2017. So... a couple of you have told me that you have sent in reviews last week, even yesterday.
The reviews Apple doesn't want us to read.
They haven't popped up yet, so this is the
number part two. We'll leave you speechless.
Where I would normally read the new reviews on this show, but we don't have them.
Censorship.
They haven't popped up. So, I don't know what to say.
Russian spies.
Keep leaving reviews anyway, Matt, yeah. I know you're listening. If you want to be a guest on the show,
5 stars.
Give us a review.
Yeah, our door's open.
Our door's open.
Just don't let her cat out.
Just, yeah.
She's indoor cat.
I wouldn't be terribly upset if Marzipan got out, but it would break Valerie's heart.
It would.
I love Valerie. I don't necessarily love Marzipan, but I love Valerie. So I want to keep that cat safe too. But that's all we have for this show. Devin, take us out.
Bye.